Call the November 21st, 2024 session of the Planning and Zoning Commission to order. Commissioner Williams, and when you're ready, may we have a roll call?
Commissioner Placer.
Here.
Commissioner Stanton.
Present.
Commissioner Galway Jones.
Here.
Commissioner Williams, here. Commissioner Lowe.
Here.
Commissioner Wilson.
Here.
Commissioner Walters.
Here.
Commissioner Brodsky.
Here.
Commissioner Ortiz.
Here.
We have nine.
Thank you. Mr. Teddy, other than the one withdrawn item we'll address, are there any other changes to the agenda?
No, there are not.
Thank you. Is there a motion to approve the agenda?
Move to approve the agenda.
Second.
Moved by Commissioner Stanton, seconded by Commissioner Lowe. Is there thumbs up approval on the agenda? Unanimous. Thank you. We all received a copy of the minutes from our November 7th regular meeting. Are there any changes or adjustments to the minutes? Seeing none.
Move to approve.
Second.
Motion to approve by Commissioner Lowe, seconded by Commissioner Placer. Is there thumbs up approval on the minutes? Unanimous. Thank you. All right. Our first order of business of the evening is a withdrawal in case number 12-2025, a request by Jonathan Gray for an approval of a conditional use permit to allow 901 College Park Drive to be used as a short-term rental for a maximum of 8 transient guests and up to 210 nights annually pursuant to Section 29-3.3VV and Section 29-6.4M of the Unified Development Code. The 3.31-acre subject site is zoned R1, one-family dwelling, and is located southwest of the intersection Dartmouth and College Park Drive and is addressed 901 College Park Drive. This item has been withdrawn by the applicant. May we please have a staff report?
Yes, and this is going to be very brief. I have no staff report on the case itself since it has been withdrawn, but I'll just note that commissioners have been provided with a brief note from the applicant as well as a cover memo from Mr. Zenner indicating that it had been withdrawn. And I'll also add that since this was a noticed public hearing, that Mr. Zenner took the additional step of providing a letter to all of the property owners and interested parties that we normally give notice to indicating that this item had been withdrawn. And that letter was sent on November 13. So we hope that was in time to save folks some inconvenience. And since this had been scheduled for some time for this date, I know that's a possibility that we did inconvenience some folks. So we're sorry about that. I will remark that we fully expect there'll be a new application filed on this. And when that occurs, we'll go through the whole process of notification again. And so you may see something on your January agenda, for example.
Very good. Thank you. Before we go to questions for staff, if any of my fellow commissioners have had any contact with parties to this case outside of a public hearing, please disclose so now. Commissioner Lowe?
Just this case is in my neighborhood, and my neighbors know I'm on this commission, and I was asked about this case.
Thank you. Any questions for staff? Seeing none. Thank you very much. Did anyone come here tonight to speak on this case? Thank you. I'm seeing no from the audience. Any commissioner comment on the withdrawal? Commissioner Brodsky?
Just make a quick comment thanking staff for being so quick to get that notice out to folks, as evidenced by the fact that we don't have folks here wasting their time.
Thank you, Commissioner. Any further comments from commissioners? Would anyone care to make a motion on the withdrawal? Commissioner Stanton.
Also, how do I say this? On the request to withdraw, I mean.
Grant.
I move that we acknowledge the withdrawal of case 12-2025.
Yeah. All right. Sorry. Thank you, Commissioner Stanton. Is there a second on Commissioner Stanton's motion to acknowledge the withdrawal?
Second.
Seconded by Commissioner Lowe. Is there any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, Commissioner Williams, when you're ready. Microphone. Low.
Commissioner Placer.
Yes.
Commissioner Stanton.
Yes.
Commissioner Galway Jones.
Yes.
Commissioner Williams, yes. Commissioner Lowe.
Yes.
Wilson.
Yes.
Commissioner Walters.
Yes.
Commissioner Brodsky.
Yes.
Commissioner Ortiz.
Yes.
9 yeses and 0 noes.
Thank you. That item will be officially withdrawn. Next, public hearings and subdivisions. Case number 262-2024, request by Crockett Engineering on behalf of First State Community Bank for approval to rezone a 12.92-acre property from RMF multifamily dwelling to PD plan development with an associated statement of intent and development plan to be known as Legacy Woods. The plan includes 49 single-family lots and 3 common lots on lot 1202 of Legacy Farms plat number 1, which is currently addressed as 5201 Ewing Lane. The applicants are also seeking 2 design adjustments for partial relief from sections 29-5.1C streets regarding block length and connectivity standards and 29-5.1D sidewalks where existing utilities would conflict with the construction of a sidewalk on the west side of Athena Drive, formerly Ewing Lane. This matter was previously tabled at the November 7th, 2024 Planning and Zoning Commission meeting. May we please have a staff report?
Yes, you may. Thank you, Madam Chair. Real quick, public notice. On this one, owner letters were sent to 5 neighboring property owners. The reason that number is fairly low is due to the fact that much of the Legacy Farms tract is still under ownership by the developer. And so that would cover the bulk of the properties within the 200-foot radius of this property. And then I think Columbia Public Schools owns the property across the road, across Sinclair. And then there was Neighborhood Association contacted as well. So that's a pretty small number for what we normally see, but due to ownership of those parcels, that's what we're left with, just because mainly it's undeveloped at this point. So it was advertised, and I forget the original date, just for the PD plan and zoning aspect. We determined that they needed the design adjustments. That's what that was the reason for the tabling. So this was re-advertised then in the Tribune on November 5th. So we have that all covered. Here is the aerial, kind of oblique. It shows Sinclair Road is that major north and south. We're just off to the west of it. You see, excuse me, I am drawing a blank on the name of the neighborhood up to the northwest. That's on the east side of Sinclair there with the AmeriCare kind of on its northwest corner. You see the parcel immediately to the north is currently under development. And then also you can start to make out some gray lines in there, and those are preliminary platted streets that will be future phases of the Legacy Farms development. So. I think that's about all we can really gather from this. Again, the John Warner Middle School is the parcel immediately to the east across Sinclair. And then they're currently building, I believe, another elementary school on that northern portion there. So, so as was stated in the introduction, the applicants are seeking to rezone from RMF to a plan district. It is 12.92 acres, currently known as Lot 2 Legacy Farms Plat 1. They are also pursuing the 2 design adjustments mentioned in regards to block length and connectivity, and then also a waiver of sidewalks on the west side of Ewing. We'll get into that in a minute. apologize, I've got a cold, so I might have to take a couple of breaks here. But lot was intended originally for one to be one lot with a multifamily development consisting of basically single-family detached units, but they would all be on a single lot, which is the purpose for the multifamily zoning there. There has been a lack of demand for that type of housing, as evidenced by the fact that nothing's been developed there, even though the infrastructure was installed by the previous developer. So the applicants are rezoning to accommodate the subdivision, basically retrofit the site with individual ownership lots for each home. Obviously, a little bit of a shift in the style of housing, but still single family kind of product, but on separate lots now. That's the intent for this whole request. The design adjustments are necessary to avoid significant modifications and expense to the current developer. Again, that is due to the existing infrastructure, street, sewer, some retaining walls, and also some telephone and, I believe, electric and water are all there. So, okay, so here's our proposed PD plan. Again, the Ewing Drive, which is actually proposed to be renamed to Athena on the PD plan, is the gray kind of circuitous route there through the site. It does go from the north end to the south, again, in order to serve kind of the intended units in both the multifamily and the single family. That kind of roundabout way of going through there was used. It also helps with some cut through traffic as well as speeds on the street. So the PD plan includes 49 single family lots, I believe three common lots. Those single family lots, they range in size from roughly, and this is just a measurement I did on the map, so it would be probably around 6,850 up to 15,000 square feet. So we're still dealing with pretty average single family lots, although some of them do dip below the 7,000 square foot minimum. So it's one reason for the plan district. The three common lots are intended for green space and drainage, and then actually there's a location where a couple of the development lots are denoted for inclusion in a larger common lot, which is down in the southeast corner there near the intersection of what is that? The exterior streets. I can't think of their names.
Darlington.
Yeah, Darlington and Crabapple. So The plan does depict all of the infrastructure installations that probably isn't incredibly visible from this this scale, but they are there. And then it does also depict some on-street parking locations that would be for guest parking. And that, again, is a remnant from the multifamily development that was proposed here. But they are intending to keep some of those. And for instance, where that common lot maybe located on the southeast corner, there are a number denoted that actually would block a driveway if those lots were to be developed. And so those, I imagine, are definitely dependent on whether or not that area becomes a common lot or if it's developed with single family lots. So I did mention the retaining walls due to topography, I think primarily between Ewing or Athena now and Darlington, there's a pretty significant topographical change. So especially in the rear yards between the lots that are facing north and south there at the south end of the site, there's a retaining wall there due to the topo change. So those have been installed as well. And again, that's was kind of necessary to get those lots to a state where they were buildable. So I think I copied and pasted it there. Let's see. So again, there's 49 single family lots proposed. I think I just copied the text from the previous slide, so let me get through here. But the map here was intended to show you kind of the mix of zoning in the vicinity. Again, the housing type's not really changing a whole lot. but the multifamily was seen as kind of a positive thing given where it was proposed, adjacent to an MN parcel that would ostensibly have commercial on it, neighborhood commercial on it. The map shows that there's additional multifamily to the north. The northernmost piece there actually extends quite a ways. There's a very large tract of multifamily zoning there. So that will still be a major component of the broader Legacy Farms development, and this will have a minimal impact on that kind of housing stock supply there. So in the concept review, staff agreed that the plan district would be the most appropriate route to take here given the existing infrastructure and just the fact that, we were looking at trying to keep as many of the planned units from the multifamily and balancing that with lot sizes. So some of those lots, again, are slightly smaller, but not significantly smaller, just a few hundred feet possibly. So just a side note, the PD plan does serve as a prelim plat, so this would be granting them subdivision entitlement to those lots as depicted on here if it were approved. PD plan we have is compliant with the UDC except for those design adjustments, so we'll get into those in a minute. So the proposed statement of intent, again, shows the 49 single family. It's actually limiting the site to those 49 single family detached units. It does propose a minimum lot size of 5,000 square feet. Again, the standard R1 is 7,000. Reduced front yard setbacks would be reduced 5 feet to 20. Reduced side yards by 1 foot to 5. Max height of 35 feet is maintained. That's consistent with R1 and R2 and RMF zoning from the UDC. They do require 2 parking spaces per unit, and they would include the garage. So the intent there is to have a 1-car garage also with a parking space in the driveway. So again, the guest parking was scattered throughout the development in those 90-degree off-street spaces. The statement of intent also requires a 25% open space. And then the final thing was that it does permit amenities such as trails and a clubhouse and potentially a pool. And again, that lot in the southeast corner is contingent on, what they decide to do as an amenity. If they decide to do a clubhouse with a pool, potentially all, I think 4 of those lots in that corner would be possibly consolidated to house that. So as we move forward with the development, I think those decisions will be made and obviously before final platting. So, okay. On the first design adjustments, really kind of 2 wrapped into 1. It may actually end up being 2 when we take this to council, but they're both from the same section here. So the first one would be block length. When Legacy Farms Plat 1 came in, they were actually granted a waiver of that section for 15 different blocks throughout the neighborhood, and they had provided other types of connections and kind of mitigated those in different ways. And that was, again, that was approved. However, this block, because it was a private street, was not included in those those design adjustments. Another reason is because it was serving the one multifamily lot, so it wasn't seen as a block. It was just kind of seen as a more internal circulation route. So let's see, I think I just jumped. So the other design adjustment from that section would be section 3IE, which is a maximum of 30 units served by a single street segment. And again, because this was a multifamily development, it was kind of just viewed as one lot, which had an internal access route, and so it was served by the lots around its perimeter, or by the streets around its perimeter. So it wasn't really considered the same way we're considering it now. So just for reference, Athena is roughly 1,750 feet in length, so it's about three times the maximum length of the street. It does serve all 49 dwelling units. They're all internal, internally oriented to that street. However, they, I believe it's like 29 of those also have frontage on one of the exterior public streets. So in terms of fire access, they are accessible from both sides. So that shouldn't be a problem. Let's see. Oh, you put it in there. It was 20 lots. I misspoke.
Yeah.
I see there. Should have read. So our code does give us 5 evaluation criteria for design adjustments. First of all, is it consistent with the comp plan? Will it create adverse impacts to abutting lands or occupants of those lands? It shouldn't make travel more difficult or dangerous for any users, whether they're in cars or on foot or on bicycles or whatever. The design adjustment should be sought to address a unique feature of the site. And the last one being they will not create adverse impacts on public health and safety. I kind of consolidated this to shorten my presentation a little bit. There's a little more detailed information in the report, but item one pretty much always conflicts with the comp plan based on the type of design adjustments we get requests for, such as sidewalks and connectivity. But the comp plan promotes the accommodation of non-motorized transportation and also safe modes of interconnectivity throughout the city. So that's a pretty glaring contradiction when we talk about granting these design adjustments. So in an effort to kind of offset this, the applicants were asked actually for a street connection between Ewing and Darlington. Again, there's pretty significant issues with topography there. However, they were able to work in a sidewalk connection, which is consistent with some of our recent efforts where we've had similar instances. We've addressed that connectivity issue with pedestrian connectivity. So that was seen because of past cases was seen as a viable alternative by staff. So items 2 through 5 in those evaluation criteria are supported by staff, or staff agrees that they're not going to create any new adverse impacts. Again, this was seen as a multifamily site, but with a number of single family detached homes on it with one internal access drive that traversed the site from the north to the south, and was actually elongated by the fact that it's very curvilinear. So the fact that we're now putting the houses on separate lots is not going to add to the issues that we already had approved on the site. So it is definitely a unique situation given the state of the property and how it's not been developed with infrastructure in place. And it's obvious that the applicant would like to avoid removing and replacing that infrastructure that they already have. So. Now on the final design adjustment, this one's in regards to sidewalks. There are sidewalks installed on the east side of Athena, and they are asking for a partial waiver so they don't have to install it on the west side of Athena. The main reason is that the sidewalk on the west side would conflict with all of their utilities, and specifically they mentioned telephone pedestals and I know sewer runs through the street, so definitely I think it was electric and telephone were the big ones, but the applicant could possibly give us a little more specific information on that. Let's see. I think we touched all those. Again, I'll show you the evaluation criteria. Same evaluation really for all of these. It does conflict with the comp plan. They did add the sidewalk as a means of offsetting that kind of deficiency. And then staff agrees with items 2 through 5 because we don't anticipate any new adverse impacts. So in conclusion, the PD zoning was deemed appropriate. It is a unique solution that would be necessary to avoid those infrastructure impacts I discussed. The design adjustments are generally supported by staff. Although they don't promote great connectivity. I think they've provided an alternative that at least addresses pedestrian and bicycle connectivity, even though maybe not the vehicular connectivity. And then the proposed development is going to be similar to in appearance and character to the approved multifamily on the site. So the impact, regardless of what happens, is intended to be minimal, and this is just really, like I said at the beginning, it's a retrofit to add single-family lots in a development that otherwise would have been on a single multifamily lot. So our recommendation would be for approval of the requested rezoning from RMF to PD, both design adjustments from 29.5.1C and D, and again, that is streets and sidewalks. Also, approval of the Legacy Woods PD plan and the associated statement of intent. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Before we go to questions for staff, if any of my fellow commissioners have had contact with parties to this case outside of a public hearing, please disclose so now. Seeing none, are there any questions for staff on this case? Commissioner Placer.
Yeah, perhaps you cannot address this, and it'll have to wait until we hear from the applicant. But this was originally planned for townhouses, and then that fell through.
I believe they were detached, kind of condo type units. Yeah, and the
condo.
Applicant can definitely expand.
I can address that just from the city side, and I believe our applicant will speak more particularly to this. But last winter, we issued what we call land disturbance permit for the site. So that allowed for the grading, the infrastructure, the street surface, the several banks of parking spaces that you see out there if you've been out to the site. We also issued retaining wall permits for some long retaining walls. All of this was land preparation for what at the time we understood was going to be 46 detached units with a clubhouse structure. And that was to be organized as a real estate cooperative, so a different kind of ownership, where it would remain a single parcel. So what remains is the infrastructure, and they now want to go to a more conventional lot program.
Well, my question was about the sidewalks. If this was originally planned to have these structures on both sides of the street, why were sidewalks not planned on both sides of the street? Why was it allowed for utilities to be constructed where a sidewalk should be?
Yeah,
that set up this need for this design adjustment.
Yeah, again, it's because it wasn't viewed as much as a public street. There would be the sidewalk on, would be the east side. There was a mid-block extension of a trail that looped around the clubhouse structure, so it did have some additional walking space for residents, but it goes to that we did not have a particular standard on an RMF lot for a complete street there.
Okay, well,
and now going to separate lots, you now have a difference in that you will have folks that are in the middle of a block that will not be connected to other lots by sidewalk. Before, it was going to be all one ownership.
I guess I still have that question, but yeah, I
understand
ponder
that,
it.
I understand your concern, but yeah. We've done commercial private streets where we've required the sidewalks on both sides, for example. So,
any other questions? Commissioner Lowe.
My question's about Athena and looking at where it accesses Darlington on the north side. Darlington looks like it could be a fairly somewhat busy street. With that access onto Havana to get over to Sinclair. And I was curious the placement of Athena on that corner, inside corner, with Havana coming in close to the south. I realize the street's already constructed, but I guess this goes back to the request for adding another connection between Athena and Darlington, and what the evaluation was of just traffic and safety with those connections.
I believe Mr. Crockett can expand on that a lot more, just based on the fact that, like I said, I asked them at the concept review phase to explore adding the vehicular connection, and based on their analysis, they indicated that the pedestrian connection was more feasible and more helpful, but the traffic study impacts were more in the previous phase. Like, we didn't ask them to do another traffic study for this. And so any type of impacts that this arrangement would have likely weren't really studied, but we went with the previous traffic study. So at that time, all of this was approved, and really the only change is the lot arrangement. So, and actually we're reducing the number of units. So the assumption would be that it, if it was approved previously, it would stand to reason. We're in a decent state now. So,
if I have two follow-ups, then the first being, I thought we were just informed that the previous development was for 46 units, and this one has 49 lots.
I'm sorry, I misspoke about that. I thought I misheard him. I thought it was less, but. Yeah.
My second follow-up is on the sidewalk that's being shown between Athena and Darlington. It appears to be on the two private lots in their setbacks, and I was just curious as to, I think previously we've typically seen that common sidewalk come back as part of a common lot.
Yeah, and they've actually added that to the plan. Is probably just the last rendition. That would have been the only change, is that they've created an easement there for that.
Would we have a I feel uncomfortable placing a common use on a private lot without easements, would we be expecting that to be placed on a common lot?
It would work either way. I believe I've seen both where it's a pedestrian easement, or you can create a common lot for that.
Thank you.
Any further questions for staff? Seeing none, come on up, state your name and address for the record, 3 minutes for individuals, 6 minutes for a group and or the applicant.
Madam Chair, members of the Commission, Tim Crockett, Crockett Engineering, 1000 West Nifong. Before my time starts, I'd like to go through just a couple of housekeeping items. I think there's some misconceptions. There have been some misrepresentations here just a little bit, so I'd like to for some clarifications, if I may.
It's part of your 6 minutes.
Okay, then I'll go through it pretty quick then. Tim, if I can get my PowerPoint work, please.
Should automatically, once you
go. I'm here with Joe Miller, president of First State Community Bank, and they are owners of this piece of property. Let me start off by talking about why, let's talk about Legacy Farms. This is a small piece of the entire Legacy Farms development. Many of you members on planning and zoning were here several years ago when this project came before this commission for approval. It's about 400 acres. This is the overall development. And Ms. Placer, this is going to comment on some of what your comment was. If you recall, this development had many different portions of it. It was all different types of residential development, from multifamily, from apartments, to townhouses, to retirement community, to all varying sizes of single family residential, from the minimum lot sizes of 60 feet up to estate lots. And so what we're here tonight to talk about is the Legacy Woods, which is right here in the middle. It's this piece right here. It was presented 2 years ago as the retirement portion, the retirement community, single family detached units. And that's what was proposed, and that was what was presented originally, and that's what we're proposing now. Nothing has changed with what this concept has been on this piece of property. They were single family detached units, basically a retirement type facility. We are asking to go from rezoning from RMF to PD on about the 13 acres. It is for 49 single family residences. It's already developed. When I say developed, we're talking about water, electric, sanitary sewer, storm sewer. It's been graded. All the roads are in place. And the development concept has not changed. Okay, that the original developer was a developer who purchased this from Iowa, and he wanted to develop it. And due to other circumstances, he's not able to develop it. And the process and the project, the property went back to the landowner. So, and we're talking about nothing's really changing. So, why are we here tonight? Well, that we're here tonight because what is changing is how they want to sell the units. As Mr. Teddy indicated, the original concept was a co-op, meaning that if you were to buy a single-family house in this development, one of 49, you wouldn't buy your house on a small lot. You would buy 1/49th of the entire development with exclusive rights to your specific house. Okay? That works in some communities. It's worked all over. But that's something new to Columbia, where you go in here and you buy 1/49th of a development and with exclusive rights. So when that developer lost it, it goes back to the bank. The bank is wanting to market it back out to the local development community. Well, local developers don't want that concept because they don't believe that the market is really accustomed to that type situation here in Columbia. What they're accustomed to seeing is you want to buy a single family house, you have a small lot in which you can purchase that on. And so the concept is not changing. It's always been a retirement type community with small single family houses. The only difference is instead of buying it through a co-op, we want to be able to sell them individually on small lots. And so that's the change that we're here tonight asking for. This is the preliminary plat. The streets, the sewers, the water, the layout, everything is exactly the same as it was presented a couple years ago. And so again, we talked about a couple design adjustments tonight. So we're talking about block length. So yes, we don't have a connection here. When it was developed under the RMS standards, we don't need to have the block length doesn't come into effect. It only happens later when we want to subdivide it. The same exact type development falls under different classifications, different regulations, even though it's exactly the same. And so that's what we're asking for here. Internal connectivity is high. All segments connect to a major roadway. We are providing an alternative location for pedestrians. So we have two access points, obviously, on either end. Typically, you see two access points on the same side with a long, lengthy area that goes back to a cul-de-sac. That's not the situation here. What we have here is one on either side that provides proper connectivity through the entire development. Putting one here, as Mr. Palmer has indicated, is problematic. There is some, it's all been graded. We've got storm sewer in place. The grade changes, it does bounce up there. Coming in with the grade, coming in higher with the street, meaning the street's gonna be higher than the units themselves, and that presents an issue. So what we're providing, or we're proposing, is to put a pedestrian connectivity sidewalk at this location. This is what was proposed on the original Legacy Farms development in many locations, and this is what was approved originally. So this would be very much in line with the original concept for all of Legacy Farms. The second design adjustment that we're asking for is sidewalks on one side. Now, this isn't uncommon for smaller developments. What we're looking for, again, we're looking for a retirement type community where our traffic isn't going to be heavy. We're not looking for a lot of traffic. We don't have a lot of vehicles. It's surrounded by roads, so it's not that anyone's going to have cut through traffic on this through this piece of property. If you're trying to get from one side to the other, it's certainly easier to go around the public roads that are perimeter to this development. The green line shows the sidewalk that's within the development itself. We're adding this sidewalk right here. So those are our internal sidewalks. We're going to add to that all the external sidewalks that go around on all the public streets. Those are in place, or will be in place during development as well. And lastly, if you recall when we were here a few years ago, we talked about having this trail network that goes through Legacy Farms. And so then on the west side of this project, there'll be a trail that cuts through there as well. So by having sidewalk on both sides of that, it's a narrower street. It's 26 feet wide because it's going to have significantly less traffic on it. And so having the narrower street, the fewer lots, all internal traffic, we believe that it gives a little more cozy feel for the smaller lots. Mr. Palmer talked about the lot sizes are more in common with a single family development. That may be because they're a little bit deeper. The sizes, the square footages maybe, but the widths are smaller. So the widths are narrower than the single family residential that you typically see. We're looking for smaller cottage types houses in here. That's the reason for the setbacks. We're trying to draw those in closer to the street and just give that cozy cottage feel. We feel that having sidewalk on one side helps with that as well. Again, the proposed development is consistent with the original concept for Legacy Farms. Nothing has changed, nothing at all. It's already constructed. The concept is not changing. The only change in development is how the lots are sold, not what is being built. So Ms. Placer, when you talked about having the townhomes, you're exactly right. The townhomes are on an adjacent piece of RMF zone property. This was the retirement portion that we're talking about today. So I'm not sure where I'm at with my time, but let me see, Ms. Lowe, I want to talk about your traffic item just a little bit. Yeah, so when we did this, when we laid this out, that northerly entrance, we could either go in at that four-way intersection with Havana and have a four-way stop, or we could push it further north, meet the city separation standard, and have two T intersections. Traffic engineers, the city traffic engineer, and just civil engineers in general like to have T intersections. It's better for traffic flow, has less conflicts than a four-way intersection. So when we design that, while we do have significant number of four-ways, if we can, we try to avoid them where possible. With regard to the amount of traffic coming from the west up there is all residential. It's probably the third of the three different access points coming from that direction. So it's going to have the less of all three and not a significant amount of traffic that's going to have conflict with our entrance at that location. And so hope that answers your question. So if you have any questions, I'll be happy to answer them.
Perfect. Any questions for the speaker? Commissioner Lowe.
Thank you, Mr. Crockett. One question on the traffic, just what is the city's distance separation?
I believe it's 125 feet for intersecting streets. And so, and I say that we're in a driveway situation, so our driveway in that case, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, Mr. Palmer, I believe it's, I want to say it's 30 or 35, but we're well in excess of that. And so, I mean, this has all gone through traffic review, so.
On the added sidewalk,
yes, ma'am.
Can you just comment on what the intended, is that intended to be left on the private property? Was it, I noticed it is stopping 3 feet short of the common lot.
Yes, ma'am. To answer the question, what we're proposing to put it on the private property in the setbacks, but have a public easement over the top of it for public use. That's how we've done it in other locations, by putting a pedestrian easement on that sidewalk. I mean, that's pretty common. We do it in subdivisions on a regular basis. There's sometimes the common location for a sidewalk in a residential subdivision is 1 foot inside the right-of-way. But for various reasons, there's a whole bunch of different reasons. Many times that sidewalk gets put back on public property, or excuse me, on private property off of the right-of-way, and we always cover that with a pedestrian easement. So that's something that's pretty common. I believe that the planning department, the public works department, they're pretty routine and they see that on a regular basis.
Is there a reason it's not connecting to the common lot?
It can connect to the common lot, but really it goes up and it's tying into the public. The reason why it's not is because the lot line doesn't connect to the common lot. The sidewalk connects to the public sidewalk that runs up and down Darlington.
But so, you can modify that lot line.
I can, absolutely. If you wanted to go to the common lot, I can do that. But the public sidewalk goes through the common lot as well, just a few feet away. But if we need to, we can pull it over and tie it to the common lot easy enough. That's not a problem. Happy to do that.
I guess I saw something in the report about there being challenges due to the grade change. And if you had longer length to work with, it might provide
right.
you a greater facilitation with mitigating
right. What
that,
Mr.
Right.
Palmer was referring to was further to the north, Ms. Lowe, two or three lots, or one lot even, but two lots further north where the shorter distance would be. That's the reason why we don't have the connection up there, because that's the challenge with grade. That's why we have it shown where we put it, is because the grade in that location works a little better for a sidewalk. And so that's why we're able to make that one work. And if we want to take it to the site, to the common lot, we're happy to do that. That's not a problem.
Well, it just seems to me if there's a common use
sure.
at the common lot,
right.
it might be nice to actually have.
We can do that. I mean, we have sidewalk on two sides of it. We're happy to change that.
You're still planning that, I hear. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions for the speaker? Commissioner Placer.
Well, just to follow up on what Commissioner Lowe just asked, will there be any challenges on the grade of that additional sidewalk, considering that this is a senior
No, ma'am. All of our sidewalks are going to conform to ADA standards.
Okay.
100%.
Commissioner Williams?
I just want to get clarity. So is this going to be designated a neighborhood for individuals 62 years of age or older?
That's what we would like. The bank is in the process of trying to sell the property, and that's what we're marketing it as. That's what the developer of Legacy Farms is wanting, and that's what we're desiring to have. That's what was originally set up as was a retirement community, and typically it's a 55 and plus age group. That's what they would like. That's what the developer would like to see, and I think that that's what our interested parties are have indicated that that's what they would like to put on the market. And they are going to be smaller homes, more patio style. We do have some walkouts. You can see in there just by the grade, we have to have some walkouts, and that's not too bad, but most of them want to be smaller patio slab-on-grade homes.
Anything else, Commissioner Williams?
No, thank you.
Commissioner Brodsky?
Quick question for you, Mr. Cockett. On your on-street parking,
yes.
I see that you're providing for some on the, I'll call it off-street, although it's directly adjacent to the street. I'm assuming this street is not wide enough to have any parallel parking on the street and allow for emergency vehicles.
You can still park on there and still have emergency services can still pass if they were to park on the street, but we're going to discourage that and ask them not to. And we want the visitor parking to be in those parking pockets. As opposed to on street, so we really don't want that. With the narrower lots and the driveways that come out, there's really not going to be an opportunity with distance to park on the street, and that's kind of the reason that drives that as well. We know you're going to have visitors, correct? And so we have to provide those locations for your visitors.
Perfect. Appreciate it.
Any further questions, Commissioner Ortiz?
Hi. You mentioned that this will probably be older people. If we only have a sidewalk on one side, even if it is ADA compliant, if there were to be multiple people with mobility challenges using the same sidewalk, wouldn't that cause some issue?
Well, ADA has standards for that. And so given the width of the sidewalk and how often we have to have areas in, passing zones, so that'll all be covered with ADA standards. So you are correct. We do have some issues sometimes when you have long lengths of sidewalks that's a certain width. We have to provide certain width of the sidewalk or passing zones within the sidewalk itself to meet those ADA standards.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Commissioner Walters.
I have a quick question just for education purposes. So
yes,
Athena is a public street.
No, sir. It will be. It's a private street.
It's private. So it's okay.
Yes,
so you'll take care of that. The parking space is coming with that as well.
Yes,
taking
sir.
Care of that. Okay.
Anything else from the commissioners for the speaker? Seeing none, thank you, Mr. Crockett.
Thank you.
Anyone else from the public to speak on this case, please come forward. Seeing no movement. Very good. We will close public hearing and go to commissioner comment. Are there any commissioner comments on this case? Mr. Brodsky.
I'll just start off. For me personally, I'm comfortable with the one sidewalk. My folks live in the Lynx development over in Hawthorne's, very similar type of development. I don't see any issue with that, and happy to support this application as is.
Any further commissioner comment? Seeing none, would anyone like to make a motion? Anyone at all? Commissioner Brodsky.
I will make a motion for approval of...
If we could have the summary slide back up. Sorry, we need our crutches.
We used to not go through all this formality. approval of case 262-2024, Legacy Farms rezoning and PD plan.
We have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Motion made by Commissioner Brodsky and seconded by Commissioner Walters. Very good. Is there any discussion on the motion? Commissioner Lowe.
Do you want to include the design adjustments?
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Legal would like you to restate it now that we have the...
Yes. Motion to recommend approval of the Legacy Woods PD plan and design adjustments for case number 262-2024.
Commissioner Walters, do you accept that amendment?
Yes, I second that.
The amendment has been made and accepted by the second. Now, is there any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, Commissioner Williams, whenever you're ready.
Commissioner Placer?
Yes.
Commissioner Stanton?
Yes.
Commissioner Galloway-Jones?
Yes.
Commissioner Williams? Yes. Commissioner Lowe?
Yes.
Commissioner Wilson?
Yes.
Commissioner Walters?
Yes.
Commissioner Brodsky?
Yes.
Commissioner Ortiz?
Yes.
9 yeses and 0 noes.
Thank you. That recommendation will be forwarded to City Council. Moving on to our next case, case number 16-2025, a request by Massey Holdings, LLC for approval of a conditional use permit to allow 806 Boulder Drive to be used as a short-term rental for a maximum of 8 transient guests up to 210 nights annually pursuant to section 29-3.3VV and section 29-6.4M of the Unified Development Code. The 0.22-acre subject site is zoned R1, one-family dwelling, and is located northeast of Campus View Drive, approximately 310 feet east of the intersection of UMC Drive and Boulder Drive, and is addressed 806 Boulder Drive. May we please have a staff report?
Yes, you may. The subject property, 806 Boulder Drive, you can see it on this overview map. It's in a subdivision known as Seven Oaks. That was platted back in the 90s, and it's located and accessed off of Carter Lane via Campus View Drive, which is its one and only entrance street, and it also is near the University of Missouri-owned track that includes the Hinkson Creek Trail and the MU Rec Trail segment of the Hinkson Creek Trail, and the location of this lot is near the end of the block. Boulder and Ames Drive, they form a single loop street, but they have names that are separate. So near the middle of that loop is where you have the transition from Boulder to Ames. And this request, once again, is for a short-term rental with up to 8 transient guests at a time, and a maximum of 210 nights in a year period. That is the maximum that's allowed by code, and anything over 120 nights requires a conditional use permit. We did send property owner letters, first postcards, and then letters notifying 43 different parties of this request. There was also an advertisement, which is a requirement for the public hearing. And we have received some comments that I believe the commissioners are aware of. Another view of the property, you can see the context there, a lot of open space around Seven Oaks. It's somewhat of an enclave, and it consists of all single family homes on the east side of UMC Drive, and it is zoned R1 single family. So this property consists of a 4-bedroom, 2.5-bath home. It's got a 2-car garage as well as a 2-car driveway. That will allow for it to comply with the parking standard for a short-term rental up to 8 occupants. Note that given the bedroom sizes that have been provided to us, the International Property Maintenance Code would allow occupancy of up to 10 individuals before it's considered crowding, but the maximum that's allowed by our short-term rental ordinance is 8. And there'll be some verification of the room dimensions, et cetera, as they advance through the process should the conditional use be approved. So this has been used as a short-term rental. the total number of rental nights since its beginning, and I believe it was November of 2023, is 80 nights. So about a quarter of the year it had been offered as a short-term rental, and now the applicant is trying to get it into compliance before the deadline of June 1st, 2025. That's specified in our ordinance. They have stated, and you do have a supplemental statement that was provided with the application. They had acquired this property for family living, for a family member to live in, and since that individual is frequently on deployment, they wanted to devise another use of the property when that individual is away, and so they did list it as a short-term rental on several of the platforms. They did provide the name and address of a designated agent. This is the person that is available to troubleshoot in case we do get complaints or become aware of other problems with its use as a short-term rental. That individual does live in Columbia. There is no history of complaints up to the point where this application has been provided, and no code violations are outstanding on this property. We do believe, and staff did a check. I did a check myself on platforms, and we do believe that there are other short-term rentals within a 300-foot radius. That's one of the criteria that you weigh in conditional uses. These are unregistered at this time, so they have not gone through this process, and I don't believe they've got rental licenses either, like this property. So just process, there's two sets of standards for conditional uses. There's general standards that all conditional uses are evaluated against, and then there are some that are specific to short-term rentals that were put in place with the short-term rental amendments to the Unified Development Code back in February. And a short-term rental is permitted, and that should say R1, and that's subject to conditional use permit, which is this proceeding. And then if approved by council, their next step is to get a specifically short-term rental certificate of compliance. They do have a short-term rental certificate that exists today, and then they also get a business license. So we evaluated this particular proposal against the comprehensive plan, and these are very broad and general goals, but in our estimation there is some tolerance for mixed use within neighborhoods that's cited in the policies and strategies of Columbia Imagined. It does support land use and growth management goals, and also economic development, in that it offers a limited amount of entrepreneurship in even residential areas. It does have adequate utilities. The rear yard is fenced. The use intensity might be considered greater than surrounding single-family homes due to the turnover frequency. But the noise impact is likely minimal. We did receive, and I provided to the commission, two of the later comments to come in, and then one was provided with the packet. Concerned individuals that own property in the Seven Oaks community that cite various objections, and among those objections, they've cited conflicts with recorded covenants, conditions, and restrictions. I do want to state that the city's not a party to restrictive covenants, at least in the ordinary case. There's probably been a few examples where to accomplish a certain governmental objective, there's been a deed restriction recorded or something of that nature. That is not the case here. It is the case that we are not a party to these covenants. And there is some relevant code that we put into the introductory chapter of our Unified Development Code. One is a statement that the development code is not intended to interfere with, abrogate, or annul any easements, covenants, or other private agreements between parties. And that's basically a statement to say that they can remain in full force and effect. It's just that it's that private party's duty to do enforcement, because paragraph C adds that the city is not obligated to enforce the provisions of any easement, covenant, or agreement between private parties. There's some language not expressed on the slide that basically say things like, where our restrictions are greater than the restrictions in the restrictive covenants, the city's ordinance will prevail. So I left that out because I didn't think that was relevant, but I wanted to state this for the record, because there's always a concern when people bring up these documents, homeowner association rules and regulations that have been adopted. We're not invalidating them, but commissioners do not have to feel that they're bound by them, because again, they're not something that the City of Columbia legislated. It's not part of our code. It's not an extension of our code. So hopefully that's clear. Going through the conditional use permit analysis, we find it does support approval. As mentioned, it's been registered as a long-term rental. There's not a complaint record associated with problem behaviors or other management of this property or maintenance. The short-term rental regulations do provide oversight and a means to address impacts. Once registered and a matter of record that this is a short-term rental, we do have some means to intervene if there are problems in the future. And then the approval does support the broad policies, strategies, and actions of the comprehensive plan. So it is staff's recommendation to approve the requested short-term rental, subject to maximum 210 nights, maximum of 8 transient guests, and a condition that you're now familiar with, that we'd recommend that the garage spaces within the attached two-car garage be made available at all times when the dwelling is in short-term rental use. I'll try to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you. Before we go to questions for staff, if any of my fellow commissioners have had contact with parties to this case outside of a public hearing, please disclose so now. Seeing none, questions for staff. I would like to start, which I know is a bit unusual, but I just want to restate what I thought you said and maybe have legal weigh in a little bit. The fact that there is a restrictive covenant, that there is an HOA, should have no bearing on what we do, because we are not a party to that. Like, we have no business in that private contract. Is that what I'm understanding?
Yeah, that's right. The city's not a party to those, essentially, contract or agreement between private parties. And so the city wouldn't have a role in interpreting that, enforcing that, considering that really in any way. And in fact, in the city code that Mr. Teddy was referring to in section 29-1.7 sub C, it actually says the city shall not be obligated to enforce the provisions of any easements, covenants, agreements between private parties. And that's the situation here.
So we shouldn't let that weigh on our decision here. And if there is such a restriction, that's between the homeowners association and on them to enforce however they want to enforce it, but not here.
They could enforce that according to their HOA agreement, right?
Thank you very much for the clarity. Yep. Thank you, Mr. Teddy, very much. Any other questions for staff? Commissioner Lowe.
Thank you. To that point, if you can go back to the slide, Mr. Teddy. Item 29-1.7B, which is not on the slide, identifies any restrictions on any of the land contained in the proposed subdivision shall be indicated on the subdivision plat by a statement of those restrictions or by reference to the recording of such restrictions in the Office of County Recorder Deeds, which I believe is what we were provided with in the Declaration of Covenants as recorded. It then goes on to say that any recorded restriction may be removed only by ordinance or re-subdivision and only after the council has determined that removal of restrictions will not be determined detrimental to any land in the subdivision or to any neighboring property. So while I understand the city is not responsible for enforcing these, this item does appear to indicate that we do review And if there are items that are more restrictive than the city's,
I'm reading
in
that.
Division and use of the land, that they're then recorded on the property. So, I mean, I read this, and my interpretation was that we've instructed this restriction to be recorded on the land, and it can only be removed by ordinance or re-subdivision. Are we removing their restriction?
I think what this is referring to here is two things. There's the requirement to record them so people know about them. When you buy a property, it runs with the land. You want to know about it when you buy it. There's this private agreement out there. If it runs with the land, it affects the land. You want to know about that. And then secondly, the city has the power to remove those through its powers. That might be through condemnation. That could be through, you know, some other power, depending on what the city is trying to do in the public interest. And so I think that's what that language is referring to.
But this isn't removal.
Well,
right. So here it says in the section you're talking about, any recorded restriction may be removed. And then it says how you do that.
May be removed only by ordinance or re-subdivision.
Yep. We're not removing it. We are simply talking about two different restrictions on the property.
We're being asked to identify a use or recommend a use that is restricted against in the recorded
But
document.
That's on the HOA to do. What you're suggesting is that we should enforce that when that's not our role. Tim?
I'm not saying that we enforce it. I'm saying that we recognize these restrictions exist.
Tim? I think paragraph B might apply to restrictions that are put on plats where the city council has actually approved that restriction. City council did not approve a set of covenants. They don't do that. They just approve the plats. So that's how I interpret that paragraph. We actually do have a provision that if a note is placed on a plat that, for example, restricts use of a particular lot, and then that plat is recorded, to remove that requires an ordinance removing the note. But that's not the example that we have here. This is something that's in
this to me is
restrictive covenants document that's adopted by a homeowners association.
This to me is more like the issue we had with Midway, where they had an easement, a private easement that they were disputing. And so every time they brought a case here, they would come here and try to talk about the private easement dispute. And that's outside of our purview. There may be that we approve something and that private easement means they can't go forward with it, but that's between the two people that are parties to that agreement. Just because we approve it, if they have a private agreement that says they can't do it, they can go enforce that later. But that's not our role. Any other questions for staff? Seeing none, we will open the floor to public comment. Please come forward if you want to speak on this case. State your name and address for the record. 6 minutes for a group or the applicant and 3 minutes for individuals. Hello.
Good evening, commissioners. My name is Kara Massey of Massey Holdings. My primary residence is listed at 401 Lakeview Drive in Smithville, Missouri, which is closer to Kansas City.
Can you pull the microphone?
Is that better? Okay, are we good? All right. I own the property located at 806 Boulder, and I appreciate you giving me the opportunity tonight to try to be in compliance with the new regulations that are in place. So as you may have heard or may have read in the staff report, we purchased this property primarily for family use and as housing for my son that attends the University of Missouri and is currently deployed with the Air Force. He's currently on a combat deployment and we're not really sure yet when he's gonna be back. And while he's away, we have been using that as a short-term rental property. So I know that it is not your responsibility to enforce the covenants of a private homeowners association. I knew that we may get into this position with our son because we understood that he was part of the Air National Guard at the time of purchase. So we had our attorney review our CCRs in Seven Oaks, and we also had our real estate agent converse with the governing board of Seven Oaks, as well as Mr. Gordon Craig, who's the association manager of community property management. And I do have an email in which Mr. Craig indicated that he had had conversation with Adam Rao, the president of the HOA, indicating that it would not be problematic to operate an STR in the neighborhood of Seven Oaks. At that point, back in 2023, I called the city to see what sort of operating permits that I needed to have, to learn that the city was kind of still in process. And so that leads us here today. So essentially, at the end of the day, I'm really excited to just continue operating as a reputable short-term rental in Seven Oaks with your permission, and it is fully my intention to be in compliance with all regulations that have been set forth. I expect that our neighbors will raise some questions about safety and security. Staff report indicated that we're listed on multiple listing sites. We are not. We are only listed on Airbnb. The reason for that being that Airbnb requires a government-issued ID for the folks that are booking the property. And when you provide your government-issued ID, you are then subject to a background check, which includes a criminal background check and a sexual predator criminal check. So please understand that this is my home also. This is my home that we stay in, that my son will live in. And it is not our intention to have unsafe transient guests occupying the property at any time. I expect that the neighbors also might have some concerns about property values. I share those concerns. I also am a property owner in the neighborhood and have a vested interest in making sure that I am not devaluing our property or any of our neighbors' surrounding property. So at the time of purchase, we paid over ask. Unfortunately, we paid over ask and then put a sizable amount of money into the property for cosmetic upgrades. We're expecting that property right now, per realtor's assessment, to come in right around $350,000. The highest selling home in Seven Oaks sold for $343,000 in the last year. I pulled some market analysis just so that we could kind of look at data about how our property might or might not be affecting the neighborhood. And some market analysis shows that on average, Columbia property for properties under $400,000 had an appraised appreciation of about 5.75%. And that's from 2022 to 2024. But the Seven Oaks neighborhood in that exact same time frame, from 2022 to year to date right now, 2024, has seen an 18.5% appreciation in value. In addition to that, the average days on market for real estate in that price range is about 36 days, average days on market, but Seven Oaks is 17. So we've been operating as a short-term rental on a very small basis, again, 80 nights over the course of a year. Those are roughly two night stays. And we just are not seeing, the data just does not support that we are decreasing the value of surrounding properties. As your staff report indicated, we have had no noise violations, no complaints from neighbors, no unsafe behaviors. We'd use Ring cameras to monitor in two locations, one over the garage and one coming in the front door. We monitor that closely. We have a property manager that comes by twice a week. We have a house cleaner that comes by once a week. We are constantly putting eyes on the property to make sure that everything is looking like it should and working like it should. So again, with your permission, we would hope to continue in this flexible arrangement that would allow our son to live there when he needs to live there and for us to be able to keep it on the short-term market when he is not available to be here in Missouri.
Thank you, Ms. Macy. Are there any questions for this speaker? Seeing none, I had a couple. How many nights over, you may have said this, sorry. How many nights over the last year do you think you've actually had guests? 80.
80, yes, ma'am.
Thank you.
Yeah, we've had 80 nights. Our guests on average stay 2 nights. I know that the word transient can feel a little inflammatory too,
it's the
right?
legal term for hotel guests.
Yes, yeah. Thank you. I was going to say, we just have had the loveliest folks. Because of our proximity to the university, which was a selling factor for us as well, or a buying factor, right? I wanted my student to be able to be close to the university. We tend to attract a lot of families that are really just here to visit their kiddo.
Which, my second question, and I'm not trying to dig too deeply into your business, but... our ordinance does allow long-term tenants to be the applicant.
Right.
Is his deployment the reason that your son's not the applicant, or what was...
My son is currently on a combat deployment, and so...
Yeah. Well, sure, yes. Sure. I figured that was the reason, and I've been there.
Yeah.
You got my heart.
Thank
but,
you. I appreciate that very much. But yes, he is not able to be. He was not in the States at the time that we filled out application, and I am on the LLC, so I am the registered designated owner of the physical property.
Very good. I think that's all I have. One last call? Seeing none. Thank you very much.
I appreciate your consideration. Thank you, folks.
Thank you. Is there anyone else here to speak on this case? Please come forward. Anyone else to speak on this case? Last call. Okay, with that, we will close public hearing and go to commissioner comment. Commissioner comments. Commissioner Williams.
I do want to ask, I know we just discussed this, but ask the city staff, the general criteria for a CUP to 1C says the proposed conditional use will be in conformance with the character of the adjacent area within the same zoning district in which it is located, and making such a determination, consideration may be given to the location, type, and height of buildings or structures, and the type and extent of landscaping screening. So I appreciate the second sentence is designed to create some indication of what is meant by the first sentence, but my question is whether or not it is appropriate to consider the covenants that are associated with a property based upon the broader considerations that are set forth for a CUP. And I raise that not just with respect to this property, but because we are seeing these routinely, almost every meeting, a CUP request for a short-term rental. And I think it will be helpful to get a little bit more clarity on how some of these broader aspects of the CUP considerations may apply to the restrictions that are set forth in HOA covenants, which I think is separate from the matter we were discussing earlier, which is whether it's a requirement to consider it based on an up or down of whether or not the HOA covenants permit it, but whether the HOA covenant can be considered as a factor or should be considered as a factor.
Well, I mean, as to considering the HOA terms itself, which is a private agreement between private parties, the city's not a party to that. So that's one thing. You know, what all can you consider? I think you consider the facts surrounding the request, right?
And if you move into an agreement between private parties, which is not really the facts of the application, then are you enforcing the agreement in some way? Which you're not allowed to do under the, clearly under the city code. Now I understand, you know, the HOA agreements, they're important to the parties. They entered into those for a reason. And in their neighborhood, that's, they're gonna care about that. And that's great. And they can enforce that. Even after tonight, they can still enforce their agreement between their parties. You know, if there was a covenant against a tall, ugly fence, and the city didn't have any regulations about having a tall, ugly fence, you could build a tall, ugly fence and not be violating any city provision, right? But the, it might still violate the HOA, and they could enforce that. And it's the same with every private agreement HOA. They have provisions on how to enforce it in their agreement if they want to. They have what's allowed, what's not allowed. Everyone's agreed to that. If they want to change what that agreement is, they can do that themselves. Make it more strict, make it more general. Most of them have provisions on how to bring that to a vote and decide if they're going to change the agreement or not. None of that has anything to do with what the city does, though. The city has its requirements in its code. The commission looks at the applications coming before it, applies the code to it. Again, doing that doesn't mean private members of an HOA can't still enforce what is in their agreement. They still can within the terms of their agreement. But the enforcement of that and the consideration of that and what those should be, whether they should stay the same, whether they should change, is all with those private parties. It's not like there's not an avenue is where I'm going. It's just not with the city.
No, I understand. I appreciate that. I think the reason for my comment was not because I was pushing for a particular outcome, but because I think it's important that we establish what the rules of the road are. And I think that there's a slight distinction between the discussion that was happening earlier about 29.1 and what can be considered within the context of what we're asked to look at in the CUP and the criteria for short-term rentals. And those are more ambiguous, broader. And so the question is what falls into those. But I just raise that in part so that we can have a record that of what the position is of city staff as to what's whether that's permissible to be considered under the CUP categories related to what's written in 29.1. So I appreciate it. You answered my question. That was the reason for the question.
Thank you.
Any other commissioner comments? Commissioner Stanton.
Yeah, I have to agree with council. That's just a slippery slope that we've never went down for that very reason of private versus public. I don't know if you're aware there are covenants that allow that do not allow African Americans in the neighborhood that are still on the books. Still, please try to enforce that. You know what I'm saying? Fair Housing Act, all those things come into play. That's why there's the separation of public and private agreements.
Any other commissioner? Commissioner Brodsky.
I'll just weigh in real quick. Generally speaking, I would I do wholeheartedly agree with staff's legal interpretation of the city enforcing private agreements. But I'm not really sure where I fall on this, but I am sympathetic to Commissioner Williams' question that specifically in the criterion specific to short-term rentals, Criterion E, whether there is support for the establishment of the proposed STR from neighboring property owners. And if the neighboring property owners have signed on to covenants, HOA covenants, that prohibit short-term rentals, then, you know, maybe that's something that we should be considering under that item. Just putting that out there for food for thought for everyone.
Commissioner Stanton.
I hear both sides of my colleagues' arguments. If we go down this road, stay down this road, and imagine where this will go. We got a half rookie and we got a full rookie. The war will be pure bloodshed if we set that tone. Because I promise you, there would probably be no short-term rentals allowed if they, if every HOA went and just put that in their bylaws, like right now. And we set the tone to make that a consideration, contradicting to our practice of keeping private and public agreements separate. So I would just say, I understand your position. We each have a vote, but deeply consider the consequences of using that as a judging criteria for future judgments.
Commissioner Williams.
I appreciate that, Mr. Commissioner Stanton. And my comment here, and I think it's exactly Commissioner Brodsky made it clearer than I did, is just that when the city at some point, as we work through these applications, perhaps considers the language that's used and the criteria, this would be something that would be helpful to have more clarity on in the CUP process statute itself as to the applicability of that exception in 29.1 to that particular standard of the STR related to neighboring property owners' support. Personally, I agree that there is a legal distinction between whether or not someone is properly can get a CUP, meet the requirements for a CUP, and whether or not they can we're giving them a license of sorts, whether or not that they have are in a situation where they can't utilize that license is somewhat separate from whether or not they qualify to obtain the license. And so I understand the distinction, but I wanted to draw out for the record that it is there is some question as to whether it could be, and I think we need to make a formal position, and I appreciate City Council, or Council for the City, putting on record the position that it's not something to be considered so that we can move forward under that approach.
And I think for my part, the way Commissioner Brodsky is framing it as another form of neighborhood feedback is probably a way in which we can include it in our conversations, because it is a form of neighborhood feedback, but it does not have any more weight than any other neighbor letter, communication, anything else we've received. And we weigh those all the time, right? We sometimes weigh them and say these are all legitimate concerns and we need to get concessions, da-da-da-da. And sometimes we weigh them and say the neighbors are upset, you need to go be a better neighbor, but we're gonna move forward. But I think viewing it as neighborhood feedback is a firmer footing than anything else. Commissioner Lowe?
I would just like to observe that we've gotten three letters on this case. One contains just comments about the covenants. The other two identify additional concerns they have. I think three is the most No, we've gone. I've missed a meeting or two.
Yeah.
Commissioner Brodsky.
I just might make one quick comment to address your comment, Commissioner Stanton. I'm usually pretty cognizant of slippery slopes because they can be slippery. I think in this instance, all the HOAs in Columbia, they could go and put this in their HOA and legally block short-term rentals regardless of our vote here tonight. So I'm not sure that we would be adding or contributing to a process that, you know, or accelerating a process that might happen otherwise. But
Commissioner Stanton and then Commissioner Placer.
Yeah, you're correct. As long as we stay with the position that we had, that we do not recognize or we separate private and public agreements. You're right.
Commissioner Placer.
I'm not sure about that, and I'm not being an attorney, but and I'm not sure what the word consider means, and I would not, because the minute we say we would consider it, and if we gave it serious consideration, we would be leaning in favor of neighborhoods that have HOAs. And we would be saying that if a neighborhood has in their HOA agreement outlawed something that is otherwise legal in the city of Columbia, then they are in essence making their own law. They are saying that we can make anything illegal, even if it's legal in the city. And I just find that to be spurious also. And there are lots of neighborhoods without HOAs, so those neighborhoods would obviously then be the target of more STRs. And that could devolve into a sort of class division. So I have all kinds of qualms about sticking this in the CUP considerations.
Commissioner Stanton.
That's why I used the example of African Americans being in certain covenants in certain neighborhoods. It's still on the books. It doesn't rear its head because there's separate public versus private agreements. Fair Housing Act allows me to live anywhere I want. So if there was an HMO or some covenant on a piece of land that said African Americans cannot live on that land, that is superseded by a private legal right to live anywhere I want. That's the situation we're in. And that's why I don't want to go down that road where we consider those kind of things. Well, there's a savvy way to do it. As soon as it comes up that the HMO does not allow short-term rentals, and that language is brought to us, now we're in a bind. I think Ms. Lowe brought to a point where there's letters with other concerns. The HML could have concerns, not stating the HMO, but could use languages and concerns that do not weigh on the HMO card. As you're speaking as a collective, we do not like this because of that, not because it's in the HMO, but because as a collective, we don't want this here because of XYZ. There's ways that you can express yourself as a collective that get the same results to express your concerns. That's would be my suggestion for that. Just don't lean on the private covenant.
Commissioner Walters.
My background is in developing neighborhoods with covenants and restrictions. In all cases, the developer had the lead role in enforcing those covenants until a certain point when enough home sites were sold to others. I was the enforcer in all those cases. If a situation like this arose, it would be brought to my attention, and it would be my decision to either to pursue it or not to pursue it. And a lot of that would weigh on how the overall homeowners feel about the situation. So what speaks to me here tonight is there's 125 people who didn't show up. Three people complained, 115 didn't. The person running the property management company seemed to be cool with it. The Homes Association guy didn't seem concerned about it. So I'm not mitigating or undercutting the people's concerns. People always have concerns about the worst case scenario. But in this case, I think the people who were opposed to it should have pressed the HOA to pursue this. And then then they could consider whether they want to spend their money to hire an attorney to enforce this to make this happen. It can still happen. I mean, they still have that option today. If they don't like the decision tonight, if it doesn't go to their favor, they can still pursue this. So anyway, 115 people are not here complaining about this.
Any further comments? Seeing none, would anyone like to make a motion?
I make a motion. I would.
Go ahead, Commissioner Walter.
I've never done this before, so I'll read from this thing right here in front of me. I make a motion to approve case number 16-2025 regarding the approval of a STR and CUP subject to the following notes: 210 nights of rental, maximum of 8 transient guests, and garage spaces within the attached two-car garage to be available at all times.
Second.
Motion for approval made by Commissioner Walters and seconded by Commissioner Stanton. Is there any further discussion on the motion? Commissioner Williams?
Just want to say that I intend to vote in favor of the motion on the based on the presentation and recommendation of the city council or the city staff that this satisfies the criteria. And not weighing in consideration any private covenants that may be between the parties in the neighborhood.
Thank you, Commissioner Williams. Commissioner Lowe?
I do feel like we are getting dissension from the neighbors. We've had cases where one person has come forward and we haven't gotten anyone supporting this, which we have gotten in the past as well. So that does bother me. However, the fact that there are other short-term rentals operating in the neighborhood, even if they haven't been licensed, indicates to me that some of the concerns are not... There's some inconsistency. So I actually think I am going to support this, even though I have some conflicted feelings about it. Thank you.
Commissioner Stanton.
Commissioner Lowe, you have stirred up I've been waiting to say this for a long time. This applicant has come out of the shadows and has went through the legal process. Any other short-term rental that exists is a renegade and is against the law and is outside the purviews of the legal system. So they cannot be considered because they're not even supposed to be there. This applicant has come to the light and has got out of the shadows and has done the legal process to become a legal entity under the law and a legal use, land use approved by the city. So if any of the other ones pop out, this one will set the precedent, and hopefully this applicant does very well. I say this at every one. These are the pioneers. You guys are the first ones. If you get approved, you guys are the pioneers. It is up to you to meet the standards higher than expected, because if you don't, you mess up anybody else that's trying to get a short-term rental in the future. Thank you.
Any further discussion? I would just point out another thing that is weighing heavily on my decision is that they've been in operation for a full year. They have had guests for 80 nights, and nothing has indicated to me that any neighbor has gone to the HOA or complained to neighborhood services, which tells me they've been good operators. And I think that's, you know, we've talked about questions that we ask, and one of the things we've been asking is how many nights a year have you been renting? And the fact that their neighbors didn't even know it was happening, they don't know about the other three that are around them, I think that indicates that these folks are good operators, so I'll support it. Any final discussion before we go to a vote? Commissioner Brodsky.
I just want to make one quick comment to some of the folks that maybe are in the audience that are neighbors of this property. In our short-term rental ordinance, you can only have one short-term rental within 300 feet. So, you know, don't feel that your neighborhood is going to get inundated with these things. This is likely the only one that you're going to see on Boulder or Ames or that stretch at UMC Drive.
Yes. Thank you very much. Any final discussion? In that case, Commissioner Williams, when you're ready.
Commissioner Placer.
Yes.
Commissioner Stanton.
Yes.
Commissioner Galway-Jones.
Yes.
Commissioner Williams, yes. Commissioner Lowe.
Yes.
Commissioner Wilson.
Yes.
Commissioner Walters.
Yes.
Commissioner Brodsky.
Yes.
Commissioner Ortiz.
Yes.
9 yeses, 0 noes.
Thank you. That recommendation will be forwarded to City Council. On to public comments of a general nature. If anyone's here to give a general public comment, please come forward. Seeing none, staff comments, Mr. Teddy.
Well, let's see. Our next meeting will be Thursday, December 5th, and yes, we do have cases. We have 2912 Green Ridge Road. That's a small final plat involving several lots and a design adjustment to waive sidewalk. 1592 East Prathersville Road, permanent zoning, county MLP district to city IG. That's the property that you may recognize as the club car wash. Headquarters site. They're contemplating an expansion. It is contiguous to the city. And then we have more of the same, 208 Redwood Road and 700 West Green Meadows, both short-term rental conditional use permits. So our secret's getting out. And these are just the location maps, first of the Green Ridge Road case on the left, and then the Prathersville on the right. And these are the locations of the two short-term rentals that'll be on your docket. And I'll also add that the cases tonight will first appear on a council agenda on December 16th. That's what we call first read. So that's just for study and to make the information public. Council will actually consider those on the January 6th agenda. And those both qualified for the consent agenda because we had strong majorities in favor of them, but they, of course, could be removed at citizen request, resident request, or the council's request. That's all I have. Happy Thanksgiving to all our commissioners, and thank you for your service.
Thank you. Are there any commissioner comments? Would anyone like to let us leave? Commissioner Lowe.
Move to adjourn.
Second.
Commissioner Lowe has moved to adjourn. Commissioner Stanton has seconded it without objection. We are adjourned.